audio.
The
recording. Now it's time for our informal. So we're in section 3, number 1. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dusty Prentice at DVM in case number 21-108. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given in ARS 3322-34. Dr. Prentice, please come forward, introduce yourself, and your attorney is represented by counsel.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm Dusty Prentice.
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Prentice.
Thank you. Dr. Prentice, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take in this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, and placing your license on probation in terms that may include continuing education practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We have no additional materials.
Thank you. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result of the board hearing, everyone speaks loudly and clearly, and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you'll be given the opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board, we wish to ask you some questions. At present, the complainant will also be given the opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. Jane, would you please give us a brief summary of the case?
This is case 21-108. On December 29th, 2020, Goliath, a 13-year-old dropped across the building, was visited by the respondent for a dental float. A dental equilibration was performed and tooth 108 was extracted due to a sagittal fracture. The socket was flushed and crushing material and flagella were placed to prevent infection and food packing. On January 5th, 2021, the respondent visited the horse due to not eating. The respondent examined the horse. He was sedated. The impression plug was removed and there were no signs of infection. The horse was treated with antibiotics and a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug. On January 7th, 2021, the respondent visited the horse. He was unable to stand due to flaccid paralysis. Due to the horse's grave prognosis, he was humanely euthanized.
Dr. Prentice, at this time I'd like to swear you in. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do, thank you.
Dr. Prentice, we'd now like to give you the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
So even in retrospect, I honestly believe that medically this case was completely handled appropriately. I understand that the investigative committee, which did not include an equine practitioner, expressed a concern that there may have been minor record-keeping violations that did not affect the diagnosis or care of the horse, and I will admit that the records could have been more detailed. However, I don't believe the lack of those details rises to the level of a violation or impacted the outcome for Goliath. The horse's condition did decline after extraction, but I do not believe this led to his demise, and I stayed in touch with the owner and promptly responded to her concerns on January 5th when I sedated the horse, removed the impression material, and noted no signs of infection that were unusual for post-extraction socket. Out of an abundance of caution, I also treated the horse with antibiotics and administered an NSAID. In conclusion, I agree with Dr. Cameron Dow of the investigative committee, who stated that the antibiotics I utilized were appropriate and that all veterinary care was provided in compliance with the standard of care. With that, I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Now I'd like to ask any board members if they have any questions for Dr. Prentice.
I know you mentioned just now that the medical records could have been more detailed, but at the time of the dental, there were things like the betadine flush and flagell pack that were not documented. Are those things that you routinely don't document, or are they things that got left out on this case?
There were things that got left out on this case. I routinely document a brief exam, and it is, every time I put a impression material in, it is, has a flagell plug proximal to that. That is something that I do every time.
And is this something that was discussed with the owner as far as putting in the plug?
That's a great question. I don't recall if I did discuss putting that in with the owner or not, but that's something that I always do, whether or not it's discussed with the owner. It's usually prepared by my technician and given to me to insert.
So with this type of extraction, because there was no evidence of infection, I'm assuming at the time of the extraction, that's why you did not do antibiotics then, and you waited until the follow-up when things weren't going as well to prescribe them. Is that correct?
Oral antibiotics for extraction with a clean socket is case-by-case basis.
Okay. So when you saw this horse after things had started going really bad and we started having a paralysis, and you thought that the most likely diagnosis, or that I shouldn't even say most likely, but the one that you discussed with the owner was the botulism. Can you describe for me what made you think that that would have been the most likely differential?
Yes, ma'am. So the horse had a couple days history of stumbling and falling, and he had some flaccid paralysis, which is only caused by a few things. It mimicked some cases that I had about 10 or 12 years ago that presented with botulism the same way. And I also had some cases that presented with salmonella, both diagnosed with salmonella and botulism that presented the same way as him. I've never had another case in my 15 years of practicing dentistry that became ill like Goliath and then passed away within 7 to 10 days of extraction.
Do you have the medical records?
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't see in there where the horse had had the multiple day history of falling down. I kind of stated that the horse wasn't eating, wasn't doing well, and then that day got to where it couldn't walk.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's probably referenced maybe in the emails, the communications between Ms. Brewer and myself. So in the medical record for the 5th of January under the exam, so the horse went off feed and was unsteady at the walk for the past 24 hours. So I inadvertently said multiple days, so it had been 24 hours. He was given Equiox last night, Bute this morning. His temp was elevated after a couple hours of Bute administration. He was dull, his appetite had improved, and his gait was fairly normal at the time of evaluation on the 5th. So the owner had reported that he was unsteady on his feet for the last 24 hours.
And at the point that you kind of thought maybe this was a case of botulism, did you talk to her about prognosis or even potential treatment should you have wanted to go that route?
Yes, ma'am, I did. I chatted with her about botulism antitoxin, and that takes a couple of days to get in. But once the botulism toxin has attached itself to the nerve cells, there's no reversal of that. It has to be treated almost like immediately before they become flaccid.
And once the owner elected to move forward with euthanasia, did you recommend a necropsy to see what had actually happened?
Generally, it is the case that I do recommend a necropsy in those situations, but I can't recall if I recommended one at that time.
I don't have additional questions. I'm not sure if anyone else does.
Do you have vaccination records for this horse?
I do have vaccination records for this horse.
What was the last step, or what was the last time it had for the encephalitis diseases and rabies.
Those generally appear at the bottom of the invoice, and looking through these, I'm seeing them come up for Nikki, but I'm not seeing them come up for Goliath.
Well, I saw an 8/13/2019, but it said a to-do date. It didn't say it was actually done that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a reminder.
Those are reminders, you are correct. I don't have that information in front of me, sir.
That would be it. When I saw it, I did not, I'm not a veterinarian, I am a lay person, but I had botulism didn't immediately spring to my mind. But encephalitis, rabies, certainly did. Any other board members have questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have a brief question of Dr. Prentice. I would like to hear your comments on the committee's opinion that since the horse was sharing a stall with a pasture with another horse, that and there was no botulism in that second horse, they felt that botulism was probably not I'm trying to look for their exact words, therefore the committee could not understand how respondent came to the conclusion the horse had botulism. So can you address that discrepancy with the second horse sharing the same stall and pasture and not having the same symptoms?
Yes, ma'am. I can. Thank you. Good question. So this isn't a contagious disease among horses. It is basically from the environment. Generally, we have speculated that horses contract botulism usually through water or through some food source that is contaminated. It doesn't pick horses sometimes that eat or drink together, it picks contaminated feed. So say an animal died on top of a stack of hay and it was infected with Clostridium botulinum, maybe got rained on, that Clostridium toxin got into the hay, that horse ate the hay, and then he or she would be infected with the botulism toxin. And it might just affect one horse because they're so sensitive to it that it's extremely difficult to test for it in their blood or even on necropsy. The cases that I had 10 or 12 years ago, it affected 12 out of the 25 horses that had the same food, the same water, the same environment, pasture-wise and stall-wise. Okay.
So about 50% contagion rate.
It's not contagious.
Okay, sorry, but affected rate from the same food.
Same food source, same water source, yes. Same management, okay. Same pasture.
Okay, and only 50% female and botulism.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And it's not contagious. Got it. Thank you.
So, remind me when we get into the discussion.
About?
I can expand a little more.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from board members for Dr. Prentice? Nikki, you still on the phone? We don't want to forget you there.
No, I don't have any questions, but I'm available.
Actually, I do have a quick question because you mentioned the vaccines. I saw here an email. I saw some here from November 24th. You said that we last vaccinated them in 2018, so every 5 years should work. What's your typical routine for vaccines?
So coming out of veterinary school, I followed the you should vaccinate everything every year. But since then, I have run my personal titers, both on my personal horses and on my client horses, and it has been well established that not one horse that has ever been vaccinated once in its life for rabies has ever contracted the disease. Not ever vaccinated for once. There's no written case of that in literature. The Eastern and Western encephalitis and West Nile, those have shorter lived immunity in general. And so I tend to vaccinate horses every year for 5 years of their life and then every 5 years to prevent reactivity. If it is a high-risk animal or immune compromised, I will do it more often, but that is my general guideline.
Okay.
So that's a routine thing. So the fact that this was vaccinated in 2018, that's pretty normal.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And you can say that's normal in the industry, or that's just from your studies, that's what you do?
That is what I do.
Any other questions for Dr. Prentice? Doc, can you step back? We'll now hear from the complainant. Please come forward and introduce yourself.
I'm Debbie Brewer.
Thank you.
Is that audible?
Can you swear you in? Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about what you got? You are the complainant in this case, correct?
Correct.
We've read the materials you've provided, and you may address the board.
Okay. So I just want to clarify the reason that Dusty Prentice was called out on the 5th. Because on the 4th, Goliath came back from the field, and he wouldn't lower his head in the box to eat. He lifted up the hoof and towards the box, and I thought that was odd, and then he did, I corrected him, and he did it again. And so I knew something was wrong. And so I went over there, and he could not lower his head. So I fed him from a bucket, and he was able to eat fine from the bucket from my lap. So I was concerned that night, and in the morning when I came out, he still could not lower his head, and he was walking with his hind legs like they were drunk. Everything else was fine. His hind legs were off. And so I fed him from the bucket again, and he was able to eat. The horse had no difficulties eating. He just couldn't lower his head for some reason. And then I called Dr. Prentice, and she came out quickly. And she had me take his temperature. I'm sorry, just let me go back a little bit. So I gave him Bute. After I fed him, I gave him Bute. I didn't know I thought he was in pain. And by the time she came out, it was an hour and a half later, she came out. And this horse that was walking around ataxic before was walking around normally. He was fine all of a sudden after Bute. She had me take his temperature, She had me take his temperature, and at that point, an hour and a half, 2 hours after Bute, it was at 101.5. Dr. Prentice said, well, I'll leave. So then she took him to look into his mouth. She put him under sedation, and she said, she found bone fragments, and took bone fragments out, and everything was good. I thought this, we're good. It was bone fragments. And then she handed me the antibiotic for the first time. Antibiotic was not given on the very first visit, though 2 months had gone by when he had a very foul odor from his mouth. And she removed a tooth because it was apically infected, and then put a dental plug in that socket where infection had been flowing out for 2 months previously without any antibiotics. So, 4 days later, he comes back walking oddly and can't lower his head. Let me clarify, on the evening of the 4th, I was out with him all the time. I fed him in multiple bouts. Each time I fed him from my lap, he would eat, and I also did some body work on him to try to figure, help. And he would, the second time I did it, probably 2 a.m. in the morning, he was not loving it when I was pulsating on his neck. Everything else was fine. The only issues he was having on that evening was not able to lower his head. And over here on this side of his head, behind the pole, I don't know the body part, but it was, when I put my hand on it, it was like higher than normal. thought that was weird. I still don't know if that's anything, though I think it was. I think that's inflammation because of an infection. I'm certain of it. And so I'll go back to the morning of the 4th after his temperature had been high. He had the bone fragments removed. And then I was given Uniprone. I did not know at that time that he was given given antibiotics. Dr. Prentice said nothing about it. She made no indication that there was anything to worry about with this horse when she left, other than throwing the Uniprone at me saying, give it to him. Later on, after this is all done, I read these notes and find out that she had given him a whole bunch of antibiotics. Then that night, he was starting to get ataxic again, but definitely the next morning, when I went out to feed him, he had been 2 days just like standing with his front, you know, holding his body up with his front limbs. He was standing in kind of a tent position where his hind legs, he was supporting his whole body weight with his front legs for 2 days. And he was walking, and it was interesting because he would walk pretty cool with his front hooves because he was trying to time it with his rear hooves that weren't working right. This horse was not weak, other than this issue with the hind end. And so when she came out on the 7th, that morning, he had finally fallen. She drove in and he had finally fallen. First, I'll clarify. When we talked about falling earlier, when Dr. Prentice talked about falling earlier, that was on the evening, I believe, of the 6th. When, at that time, he'd started having a change in what you all call mentation. He started becoming scared, like when Nikki would bite at him, it scared him, and rather than his normal self biting back at her, he just fell, and he got back up, and I told Dr. Prentice that, and so that's where the falling was. I indicated that in the notes, and that's what she was referring to, but he was not always falling. The horse was carrying himself, his hind legs weren't doing what they were supposed to, but he was never weak. He didn't have any signs of botulism, not a one of them, after reading it. And she determined on the 7th that my horse had botulism. She had never seen him walk ataxically, if you say it that way, because by the time she came out the first time, he was cured because of the bute. And then by the time she came out the next time, he was on the ground. And he had just got on the ground. And she didn't try to get him up. She didn't try to give him any tests for botulism, which there are. There's the grain test, there's the tongue test. She didn't try anything. But she said, in my experience, this is botulism. You never saw the horse. You never saw anything that would indicate botulism other than he's laying on the ground at this point in time. It could have been tons of things. And my horse was put down because of a completely false diagnosis without any evidence and without ever doing any tests for infection, but she treated for infection, and everything that he had suggests infection. He had an infected tooth. All of a sudden, he can't put his head down. And infection like that goes systemically. And so, as I had said in my original notes, and excuse me for finding my place, other than the fact that she neglected to inform me that she had given him intravenous antibiotic treatment on the 5th, and neglected to relay an appropriate level of concern for his condition, leaving the impression that the removed bone fragments were the issue and would improve with the following Uniprim. And then stating later in an email on the 6th that we're behind the curve on the infection. There's no infection, but yet we're behind the curve on the infection. I'm just, and because of infection that can go on like this, he was at risk for systemic inflammation response syndrome and potentially sepsis, which is a leading killer of equines. Accepted practice of protocol is to recognize that his situation could be a serious emergency and to be treated in the serious nature, which he was not. And to follow that up with a diagnosis of botulism so that he was put down is unacceptable, in my opinion. That's all I have.
Do any board members have questions for the board?
Couple questions. I believe, I just want to make sure I have this correctly, that you stated that at the point that Dr. Prentice felt that botulism was what was causing his issues, were there other conditions discussed with you that could potentially be causing that as well?
No, ma'am. We, my friend and I were there on the 6th, or I'm sorry, on the morning of the 7th. This was the first time botulism came up. And in fact, it was kind of, And we kept asking, could it be this? Could it be that? Could it be the other thing? It was no, no, no. Just botulism. I had no hope of it being anything else.
Did she recommend testing? I know you said she didn't do any, but did you guys discuss testing?
I believe she, as Dr. Prentice said, she probably said that you, by the time you get the information back, it's too late. But there are tests you can do. You can do the grain test, and you can do the tongue test. Those are tests for botulism that could be done right where it was at. On the morning of the 7th, the horse was alert. The horse was, he was just on the ground. He wasn't on the ground with his head down. He was on the ground with his head up. He looked like he was normal. So any test that needed to have been performed to rule out botulism could have been done.
My last question, did you ever discuss doing a necropsy?
I know Dr. Prentice said that she might have said that, but no, that was not discussed. I did take a sample of blood from him, but I took it too late by the time it had coagulated and I just got the teeniest amount. I still haven't, I have it, I haven't had it tested because all of my, everything that I've read suggests that it's just not enough blood to test. But that's it.
Any additional questions? Do you have the vaccination records?
I do, sir. Yeah. It was not 2000. Are you talking about the last time that he was vaccinated? So I have them all. I have the 8/13/2018, 7.
So I'm interested, what's the latest vaccine for the core antigen, the rabies, Eastern, Western?
He had the 8/13/2018, he had the four-way EWT, the WN vaccine, and the rabies Equirav on August 13th, 2018. Yeah, it was in the records wrong, but I have the invoice here.
Any other board members have questions? Seeing none, we step back. Dr. Prentice, do you or your legal counsel have any additional remarks or questions you'd like to ask?
I have a few comments afterwards. Dr. Prentice may have some as well. Just in response to what the owner just said about not being advised that antibiotics were given, I believe the way Dr. Prentice does her medical records, they're done contemporaneously, and then she generates an invoice at the same time. And if you look, there's on the invoice, it specifically says for January 5th, antibiotics, penicillin, and all the other medications. So that was disclosed to the owner that antibiotics were given. I wish you had the benefit of Dr. Byrne being here today, had the benefit of his input in this case, because it's oftentimes difficult for or it's a challenge for small animal practitioners to understand and appreciate the realities of large animal, what large animal practitioners face in the field. I believe the investigative committee was correct when they concluded that medically this case was handled appropriately by Dr. Prentice. When the owner expressed concerns following the dental procedure, which again involved the extraction of a single tooth, the owner's concerns were not ignored. In fact, the owner said just now that she came out, meaning Dr. Prentice, came out immediately. So there was no lack of due diligence on the part of Dr. Prentice's fault, or on her behalf. Nothing that Dr. Prentice did fell below the standard of care in this case. As in virtually every other case, the records could have been more detailed, but I don't believe anything rose to the level of violation. Record-keeping violation, or if you feel any action is required in that regard, this is perhaps a case where it would be appropriate to issue a letter of concern on being more detailed in the medical records, but certainly nothing beyond the minor record-keeping violation that was proposed by the committee, specifically ARS 32-2233-B3. Nothing beyond that would be warranted by the facts and circumstances of this case. Do you have anything else you wish to add?
Yes, sir, I would like to. Dentistry is about 80% of what I practice, and I commonly perform minimally invasive dental extractions and sinus surgeries. Signs of infection in a socket include sinus infection, sinus discharge, potentially odor from the nose or from the mouth. And it's not uncommon for bone fragments to be found in post-extraction sockets because of the hypsodontal type of dentition. Those are usually removed on pre-check. So I couldn't correlate any of his physical signs after the extraction with my previous work on that horse. Lots of different things can cause a horse to do this, as you, Dr. Lovett, had pointed out, encephalitis.
Not doctor, don't give me trouble.
Mr. Lovett, sorry. Botulism, encephalitis, toxin, trauma, all of which were discussed. As the horse kind of lay down. Personally, I don't have a great memory when I'm highly stressed, and I figure that most other people, including clients, don't as well, which is why we have a medical record and why we write down what we did and the plan. So although Ms. Brew did not recall the different types of diagnosis that I gave her, certainly those were chatted about, and then also written down in the medical record that it was the most likely cause, not necessarily the cause of his demise. The horse's physical exam did not indicate that he was toxemic or bacteremic or septic other than the low-grade fever. His gums looked pink, they were not septic or toxic, and he was not dehydrated. He just had a flaccid paralysis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions from the board members? No? Seeing none? This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony.
I'm sorry, Mayor. May I approach just in response?
No.
Thank you.
I'll wait till discussion, then I'll explain that, okay? This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So to answer the question, well, first of all, maybe I would have counsel give me that the respondent always has the last word because they're the ones in jeopardy, right? So whoever's in jeopardy, you are not in jeopardy. we can't do anything to you, nothing's going to happen to you.
But if a statement was made that's not accurate, I'm not able to correct it?
That is what we're going to decide, whether we think it's accurate or not. All right, and Dr. James, you were the lead.
So, this is a tough case for me because I feel like there were certainly some medical records violations that we were in ourselves that, you know, probably wasn't documented as well as it should have been. You know, I go back to the things that are missing and I go, investigative committee might have had it right as far as minor records violations. I think that the bigger piece for me in this case is just how well the owner was kept informed of what was going on as this horse started to decline. And then when it got to the point that we have a horse that can stand on front legs and not on back legs and not lifting head and doing some other things, I feel like more testing should have been done at that point. Whether other things were discussed or not, I don't think we'll know because the veterinarian is saying, yes, other differentials were discussed, but the complaint is saying no, that it was basically said that it was botulism. I am concerned that we didn't discuss other testing and other options and finding out what the ultimate diagnosis was, because I'm not convinced this is botulism. I feel like we might have jumped a little bit to that conclusion, and I can't say for sure one way or the other, but the fact that we didn't talk about other things, didn't do any testing, and didn't do a necropsy puts us in the position we're in today, where we don't know. We don't know what happened because we didn't fully do what we should have done. So I think that's where I have a bigger concern. I don't think that was necessarily one of the concerns of the investigative committee, but in listening to everything today, I think that that's my larger concern, more so than the medical records.
So I had... There's several different directions I want to go in my mind here. First, let me ask you, you asked about the botulism.
Yes.
I agree with exactly with what Dr. Prentice said, but I would have used a little different scenario because the investigative committee was coming at her, well, how come everybody else didn't get sick? Well, you can have one dead rodent, and that can be in one mouthful of feed, one mouthful of hay, one little tiny part of the bag. So only one horse would eat it. So of course only one horse would get it. I mean, that's easiest. It just takes one dead rodent.
It would contaminate a broader area of the hay?
Possibly.
But we think about the botulism.
It depends on how decayed it was.
Yeah, we think about botulism in people because people have canned stuff at home. I mean, I do home canning myself. It's fun. But there are certain times you need to use a pressure cooker because there's not enough acidity in the product to actually sterilize it the right way. So we think about it in cans of food. You open it up, everybody eats it, everybody's going to get botulism. For animals, it's not the similar thing. The food could be contaminated right in one area, and that could be the problem. So you could have a dead barn cat in an area, field mouse, or something like that causing it, but it's a very small thing that's causing that problem. It's not the entire enclosed
source species, too. Because I can take that same bale of hay, that one dead little rodent, and I may throw it in a mixer wagon and churn it up and mix it with some grain and some silage and, you know, get that moist, put a little molasses in there and mix it up real good and then spread it down a feed bunk, then yes, I can make them all sick.
Yes.
So it depends on, but I also think way too much emphasis on both sides is on botulism. Maybe. Could be.
And horses are pretty susceptible to it. But
maybe not. Yeah. There's tens of other things that it could be. Rabies. I mean, those are exactly the same signs. When they act stupid, horses, when they get rid, horses and some other prey animal species, they don't get aggressive like a dog or a skunk or a coyote and come after you. They act stupid. Right? They get a toxic and they act stupid. When West Nile was first sweeping across the country, there was a lot of veterinarians that were thinking West Nile because it looks kind of the same, and they put their hand in the horse's mouth or something, get a little cut, it wasn't West Nile, it was rabies, and they had to go through all the injections. I mean, there was a lot of that stuff going on, so. And I'm a layperson, so I'm not gonna try to speculate. I do not think that it is common practice to space out the vaccines. And I know there's stuff on titers, they talk about them on the dog and cats, whether you need to do it every 3 years or every year or whatever it is, depending on what type of product you're using, whether you're using long acting or the single year. You know, titers aren't the only thing.
No.
I mean, cell mediated immunity goes a long way. Titers always, high titer doesn't always indicate that the body can fight off.
No, titer doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, a high titer could indicate a resistance, but a low titer doesn't necessarily mean it's not.
Yeah.
And in vaccines, I mean, there's so much around vaccines. I mean, I'm gonna use the word political, not in relation to what's going on in the current environment,
right.
But for years on the small animal side, and even on the large animal side, there's a lot of how often do we need to give vaccines, comparing to people, comparing to other animals, how long does immunity last? And it's changing, it's gonna change in the next coming years. And it's very hard to know what's gonna work and what's gonna not work, but spacing out vaccines beyond what the manufacturer recommends is a very common practice. Is that right or wrong? And we can't really say one way or the other, but I don't necessarily think it's wrong. I mean, again, that's where the politics comes in, because the manufacturers of the vaccines recommend a certain protocol. Science is saying a different protocol, and when are we going to be on the same page? And it's going to be years before that page is the same.
How easily can tests be done to, are they blood draws, a lay person, I don't know, are they blood draws, or what to rule out encephalitis or rabies?
Depends on what disease we're looking at. I mean, if we're specifically talking about botulism, as the complainant mentioned, there's the grain test. Basically, give a certain amount, I want to say it's like 8 ounces of grain, we see how fast they can eat it, how are they eating it, can they actually prehend the food, is it falling out of the mouth, what's going on there? But again, that's open to interpretation. There's the tongue test, and there's a weakness, a flaccidity of the tongue, and you kind of pull it out, is it hanging to one side, what's going on? But it's all very subjective diagnosis. There's a mouse bioassay, I think it is, that takes typically around 5-ish days to get results back, but there's a lot of false negatives with that too. So it's mostly diagnosed based on clinical signs. That's how botulism works, is it mostly done. There's tests that can be done, and it's all suggestive, nothing is really guaranteed. So it's a very hard one in that regard. But again, I think we're focusing too much on botulism.
Well, I think we're focusing too much on all of it, really, because even if it's not botulism, it's one of the forms of encephalitis.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get to that ataxy part, you're not going to save them. You can give supportive care, and maybe they'll live through it, have some kind of side effects that they can still live with and kind of get by, but they won't ever be normal.
Yeah.
But 99% of the time, you're not going to save. Once they show those neurological signs, it's not coming back.
No, I've never dealt with botulism in the horse. I want to say it can be as low as 50% survival rate, but I've dealt with botulism in wild animals, zoo animals, that kind of stuff, many times, and it's never been. The ball wheel one time, it's never. Botulism is a horrible condition. I mean, even on people, like botulism, I mean, you're looking at ventilators.
And here you're talking about botulism again. What did I say?
Well, yeah,
we're emphasizing it.
True, yeah, true.
We don't know.
But again, there's a lot of speculation, but we don't know. I think equine herpes virus even presents like this. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential. That's a portable disease. I mean, there's a lot of potentials out there for things that we don't have an actual diagnosis. We don't know what's happening. It's just an unfortunate situation.
So, and again, one of the other comments that's going to be, yes, I wish, and there's several of us in the room wish Dr. Carlin was here. I am very comfortable, again, the lay person, I am very comfortable saying that the tooth had nothing to do with it. And there was antibiotic put in the very first time. Now, was it a little cat under the packed in? Yes. Was it in the notes properly? No. But it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in every other horse, and there was never a problem. And then this one time, one horse has a problem. You come back and you get the little bone chips out, put in the same antibiotic again. And along with, I see some penicillin, and there's some, you know, perception on the complainant side that, oh, we've got a bunch of antibiotics. Well, only see two. I see 35 mils of penicillin and 3 grams IV, so I'm not sure exactly what the gentamicin. To me, I mean, if somebody offered to give me penicillin, I'd say, please give me something else. And 35 milligrams is what I would take for my weight.
35 milligrams, 35 mils, I got it. Well, and I agree with you that, sorry, I can catch up.
And that is off label.
Yeah, but I can't say
it's not. Well, because on label doesn't work.
Yeah. Now, I can't say it's not related to the tooth. I agree with you. I think your thought process is right. But I mean, yeah, there's a possibility an infection could have set in from like going to a meningitis and that causes neck pain and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of theoretical stuff, but we can't really hold one thing or the other. The biggest thing is it's a complication. And I mean, there's an axiom among surgeons and in medicine in general, if you're not having complications after surgery, you're not doing enough surgeries. Complications are gonna happen. There is a accepted percentage of complications. Sometimes those complications are gonna be death. I mean, that's just, unfortunately, a failing of medicine. We're never going to be able to fix 100% of the things. The problem was that complication the result of, again, going back to negligence and these kinds of things, or was it just something that happened? And, I mean, this is kind of a something that happened. I don't know if this is a... This is, again, it's an unfortunate situation, but is it the fault of anybody? I don't know if we can say that based on what we're seeing here.
I don't think that's where I go back to. I don't think the... care that was provided was below the standard. I think not doing antibiotics right out of the gate is normal. I think, you know, yeah, could have been documented that she packed it, those kinds of things. But the care itself isn't what bothered me. I think it's more the communication around what was going on, what were the next steps going to be. When things didn't go well, I agree 100%. You start getting these neurologic conditions, the chances you're going to have any positive outcome of it are probably minimal at best. And the right answer, and hopefully it helps the complainant in this process, the right answer, regardless of what it was probably euthanasia. The problem is that it was that communicated, and I think that that's why we're here today, is because we had a failure in communication around what was going on and what were our options and what might have been the cause here. So I think we see that a lot. Communication is probably the biggest thing we see. And it, you know, we sometimes go where, yes, it rises to the level of a violation, and sometimes we say it was poor communication and it should have been done better, but we don't see that it falls to the level of a violation. So I think that's really the crux of where we're at right now. Regardless of what it was, we won't know. We won't know. I don't think there's any way now to say this is what this horse died from. We didn't do a necropsy and we didn't do any testing.
And you might have done a necropsy and not known anyway.
Right, you might have.
Right? But there, you may have had some rule out.
I mean,
you could still be guessing.
I do have a little bit of concern, though, that some of the other differentials are things that are contagious. You have another horse on the property. There is some level of reasoning as to why you want to know what this horse had.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was communicated well to this owner. That's just from hearing the testimony. I don't think that she had any knowledge of that issue. So, I mean, I go back to me, it's more of a communication issue on what was going on and a minor records violation, but the actual care that was provided isn't what I had an issue with.
So, with that in mind, do you have a motion in mind?
So I will make a motion that we support the investigative committee's findings on the minor record violation of 32-22-33-3 with regards to the lack of concentration on the pencil and the lack of documenting the flagellum, the betadine flush. And I would lean towards a letter of concern regarding the communication in this case and how well it was communicated to the owner, different differentials, as well as different testing that could have been done to try and determine the cause should the owner wanted to do that. And I think all of that should have been documented in the medical record.
So we have a motion on the floor. Ms. Frost, be on the phone. You can help me out.
Second.
Yeah, okay, second.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, nobody here was helping out, so. All right, we have a motion on 42nd. Minor record vault violations and the letter of concern on communications. Any further discussion? I guess I would just add or emphasize a little more communication, communication, communication. 99% of what we see is some form of communication issue. And I don't think, and part of the reason for having this lengthy discussion we have is, one, we don't have Dr. Burns here, and two, we want to help both parties kind of understand where we're coming from. The horse was not euthanized because of botulism. That was one of the things. It was euthanized because it was down. And the chances of it ever getting up, no matter what else it might have had, were slim to none. So, I mean, generally when a horse like, when an animal, that type of animal is down, they're down, period. And euthanasia is the only thing to do. Necropsy, we always love when we see a necropsy report, and sometimes it gives us an answer, and sometimes it does not. But if we don't do it, we don't even have a chance at it. So I would emphasize those two things that already came up. Okay, the motion on the floor is to find a minor record violation and issue a letter concerning on the communication. Let's do, if there's no other discussion, let's do a roll call.
Ms. Greer?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
And Dr. Red is aye. The motion carries.
Okay, this concludes this matter. And next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, and after doing so, we'll then discuss the type of letter. Do we need to do that?
Mr. Bowie, members of the board, because this is a minor violation, you may be able to wrap things up today.
Yeah.
Because the only action that you could take is to impose a civil penalty of up to $1,000.
So, we'll close it out today.
So, do we have to ask if there are priors before we decide on the
We got findings of fact and conclusions of law first. We still have to do that part.
No problem.
Yeah.
Well, I think the motion was to find a violation based upon the investigation.
Yeah.
But we still have to go through the whole findings of fact and conclusions of law thing.
Well, but if you've adopted the IC's findings, we can incorporate that into the consent agreement. You've identified the conclusions of law, the violation, and now the only thing to discuss is one, first finding out if there's priors, but then two, the amount of the civil penalty, because the statute limits you to just the civil penalty in this case.
I was saying, before we get the priors, we have to make a motion for the conclusion to law. That's a fact, right?
I think the motion already, I'm sorry, Dr.
Oh, does that already include that part?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because it's the same day.
Yes.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is typically not the time that you would look at priors and decide what the penalties are. We do that the next meeting.
Well, Victoria, this is just that they only found one minor medical record keeping violation, so they were just gonna.
Just be done with it, like straight.
Okay.
Then they can only find a civil penalty.
Okay.
So they were just gonna wrap up this whole thing and just be done with it, not bring it back.
And it's closed 30 days.
Awesome.
No priors.
There's no priors.
No priors.
No priors. Okay. And you don't have to.
Yeah, it's a good question.
We found the violation, it's on the record.
You don't have to do anything, I mean, you do it.
I don't know.
37 cents.
Well.
I don't have that statute on the record.
You gotta do something.
Yeah.
And because of it's a, your only option is a civil penalty in this case, and it can be up to $1,000.
But it would have to be something.
So I'm.
So that's kind of like where courts get like $1.
I'll make a motion, in this case, so 21-108, that we have a $500 civil penalty related to the minor medical records violation.
How's it going? Payable the most.
No priors? No priors?
No. Could have been a major medical records violation. And if not payable, are you sending it within 30 days?
Payable within a certain time.
Oh, payable within 30 days?
Do we have a motion?
Second.
And a second. Hey, motion on the floor, civil penalty $500, paid in 30 days. Any further discussion? Take a roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lodi?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
And Dr. Rice is nay, the motion fails.
For different reasons.
Problem.
I'll make a motion for $150 civil penalty. Payable within 30 days.
Payable for what?
I'm sorry, oh, payable within 30 days. Sorry.
Motion?
Second.
And a second. Any discussion?
I just feel like with.
Pardon?
The way this case went down, the fact that this, it's questionable as to whether it's a medical records violation or a minor, we're making it a minor because of this situation and that we don't feel like it impacted the outcome. But you could have gone either way on that, and on top of it, you have a letter of concern going out that is a real, I mean, I know you're not reprimanding for the letter of concern, but this case had problems with it, and I feel like, I'm not trying to dismiss it completely, is what I would say.
Yeah, my concerns deal with not really having a diagnosis, not fully, as a layperson, not seeing that the testing is fully explored. And that's where my concerns lie. I think it's more serious.
And I can understand that, but it's a fairly short period of time. There wasn't a lot of time. Because once you see neurological signs, it's time to end it.
But understanding for the sake of the rest of the crew could have been very important.
It is, but you can only test one thing at a time.
I don't care if it affected this horse.
It is, but you only test one thing at a time, so we're looking at a $400 test here, a $600 test there, a $200 test there, this test.
Affect the rest of her?
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things, that's probably something you would find more in necropsy. I mean, I don't know if you find a diagnosis before death at this point with what we're seeing here. I mean, this is a dog, I can stick him in a kennel for a week and a half on fluids and stuff. A horse, if it's down, it's dying. So I mean, there's not time to get those tests back in a horse. There's time to get them back in a dog and a cat.
down.
I'm not saying it would have been time to get it back for this. It would have been time to get it back for the sake of others or for the closure for this owner, who clearly is dealing with the fact that she doesn't know what happened here. And if she knew what happened, we wouldn't be sitting here today.
Bingo, yes.
I think we would not be sitting here today, but that's why I don't know. I think that there were things that should have been done differently.
I think the only time a diagnosis is made is after death, one or the other. That's what the necropsy would come in, but again, we come back to the whole necropsy situation. But I don't think, I mean.
Well, and just because one event happened and then another event happened a couple days later does not mean the two are related at all. Could be.
They could be coincidental.
Could not be, right? And you can't necessarily equate one with the other. So, all right, so the motion on the floor is $150 fine. We do have a second. We've discussed it. Any further discussion? Let's do a roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
No.
Mr. Louis?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
No.
Dr. is not in motion carries.
Okay, so the board has decided to find minor medical records violation, issue a civil penalty of $150, and issue a letter of concern about communications. If you have any questions, please call the board's executive director, Victoria, or the board's office. This concludes the informal interview. Thank you, everybody, for participating today.